माधवा जबीरा जाय राधा माधवा संजबिहारी गोपी जनाबला भागिरिहुर जारी गोपी जनाबला भागिरिहुर जारी जासोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना जासोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना जामना तीरा बनाचारी जामुना तेरा भनाचारी जय राधा माधवा सिंह बिहारी जय राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी
जय विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिविदुकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर सतसी श्रीमारस डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी के हरिपाद की अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की ग्रंथ राज श्रीमद भागवतम की गौर पिमनंदी ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ग्लोरीज टू श्री गुरु श्री गौरम हियर्स एन एक्स्ट्रा बुक इफ समबडी वांट्स वन कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 2 टेक्स्ट नंबर 30 Tvayambhujakshakirasattvadhamni Samadhinaveshita Chetasaike Tvatpadapotena Mahat Kritena Kurvanti Govatsa Padam Bhavabdhim Tvayambhujakshakirasattvadhamni Samadhinaveshita Chetasaike Tvatpadapotena Mahat Kritena Kurvanti Govatsa Padam Bhavabdhim Tvayambhujakshakirasattvadhamni Tvayambhujakshakirasattvadhamni Samadhinaveshita Chetasaike Tvatpadapotena Mahatkritena Kurvanti Govatsapadampabhabdhim Tvayambhujakshakirasattvadhamni okay, Svayambhu Chakshakira Satvadhamni Samadhi Navejata Cheta Saike Tvatpada Potena Mahatkatena Kurvanti Govatsa Padam Padvamni Tvayi in you. Ambuja Aksha, O lotus-eyed Lord, Akila Sattva-dhamni, who are the original cause of all existence, from whom everything emanates, and in whom all potencies reside. Samadhina, by constant meditation and complete absorption in thoughts of you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Avishita, fully absorbed, fully engaged. Chetasa, but by such a mentality. Eke, the one process of always thinking of your lotus feet. Tvatpadapotena, by boarding such a boat as your lotus feet. Mahatkritena, by that action which is considered the most powerful original existence, or which is executed by Mahajanas. Kurvanti, they make Govatsapadam, like the hoof print of a calf. Bhava Abdhim, the great ocean of nescience. Translation, O lotus-eyed Lord, by concentrating one's meditation on your lotus feet, which are the reservoir of all existence, and by accepting those lotus feet as the boat by which to cross the ocean of nescience, one follows in the footsteps of Mahajanas, great saints, sages, and devotees. By this simple process, one can cross the ocean of nations as easily as one steps over the hoof print of a calf. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The true mission of life is to cross the ocean of nations of repeated birth and death. Those in the darkness of ignorance, however, do not know this mission. Instead, being carried away by the waves of material nature, prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha, they are undergoing the tribulations of ritu samsara vartmani, repeated birth and death. But persons who have achieved knowledge by the association of devotees follow the Mahajanas, Mahatkritena. Such a person always concentrates his mind upon the lotus feet of the Lord and executes one or more of the nine varieties of devotional service, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam. Simply by this process, one can cross the insurmountable ocean of nations. Note that's a contradiction. If the ocean is insurmountable, then you can't surmount it. But then you can. Paragraph. Devotional service is powerful in any form. Quoting Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Sri Vishnu Shravane Parikshit Abhavad Vayasaki Kirtane. According to this verse, Maharaj Parikshit became liberated by fully concentrating his mind on hearing the Lord's holy name, attributes, and pastimes. Similarly, Shukadeva Goswami simply glorified the Lord, and by speaking on the subject matters of Krishna, that constitute the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, he too was liberated. One may also be liberated simply by sakya, friendly behavior with the Lord, such as the power of devotional service, as we learn from the examples set by the Lord's many pure devotees. Sayambhur Narada Shambho Kumara Kapilo Mano Plado Janako Bhishmo Balir Vayasakir Vayam. Bhagavatam 6th Canto. We have to follow in the footsteps of such devotees. For by this one easy process, one can cross the great ocean of nations, just as one might cross a small hole created by the hoof of a calf. Paragraph. Here, the Lord is described as Ambujaksha, or lotus-eyed. By seeing the eyes of the Lord, which are compared to lotus flowers, one becomes so satisfied that one does not want to turn his eyes to anything else. Simply by seeing the transcendental form of the Lord, a devotee is at once fully absorbed in the Lord, in his heart. This absorption is called samadhi. Dhyana vastita tadgatena manasa pashyantiyam yoginaha. Bhagavatam 12.13.1. A yogi is fully absorbed in thoughts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for he has no other business than to think of the Lord always within the heart. It is also said from 10th Canto, Chapter 14, Samashataye padapallava plavam mahatpadam punyanyashomurade bhavambudhir vatsa padam padam param padam 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 yadvipadam natesham. For one who has accepted the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord, who is the shelter of the cosmic manifestation, and is famous as Murari, the enemy of the demon Mura, the ocean of the material world is like the water contained in a calf's hoofprint. His goal is Param Padam, or Vaikuntha, the place where there are no material miseries, not the place where there is danger at every step. This process is recommended here by authorities like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, Swayambhu, Narada, Shambhu. And therefore we must take to this process in order to transcend nescience. This is very easy, but we must follow in the footsteps of great personalities, and then success will be possible. Final paragraph. In this regard, the word mahat kritena. In regard to the word mahat kritena, it is also significant that the process shown by great devotees is not only for them, but also for others. If things are made easy, this affords facility for the person who has made them easy, and also for others who follow the same principles. The process recommended in this verse for crossing the ocean of nescience is easy, not only for the devotees, but also for common persons who follow the devotee, Mahajano Yena Katha Sapanta. The whole of the Bhagavatam, including these prayers, 10th Canto, Chapter 2, it's, in one sense, expanding the message of the first verse of the Bhagavatam. The first verse of the Bhagavatam is saying, you could put this purport over there in the first verse, and it is explaining the first verse. The message is The message of the Bhagavatam is to reach transcendence, to reach the personality of Godhead. So to reach the personality of Godhead, it can be stated in a negative or the positive. It's without nescience. But that's incomplete. That's to say what it isn't. You have to say what it is. What's that existence that's without nescience? That's a big question. Samadhina in this verse. Without nescience is where the mind is fully absorbed in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because the Supreme Personality of Godhead includes everything. It includes his form, and where is his form, his abode, his associates, his paraphernalia, the whole of the Holy Dham. And the verse is saying his lotus feet are dhamni. They supply that transcendence. It's very logical. Wherever the Lord's feet are, he is. His feet aren't separate from the rest of him. In fact, each of the limbs, angani yasya sakalendriya vritti manti, each of the limbs can perform any of the function of the other limbs. Wherever he is, everything is. Everything. So meditating on his lotus feet, that's a common question. What does that mean? What does it mean? What are we supposed to do? It's similar to the instruction of worshipping the deity form, beginning with the lotus feet, etc. At the same time, he's called the lotus-eyed Lord. Ambujaksha. O lotus-eyed Lord. So, by meditating his feet, you're not seeing his lotus eyes, but his feet are non-different. With the feet come the form and the fullness of the Supreme Lord. So one could say it, you know, the reverse. Just by meditating on the lotus feet of the Lord, this provides samadhi. The verse is saying, or excuse me, in the purport, Prabhupada is saying, by seeing the lotus eyes of the Lord, one then no longer desires to see anything else. Now, we've all seen the lotus eyes of the Lord, and we have attraction for other things, which means we haven't absorbed ourselves in this full absorption position. In other words, our seeing is incomplete. We're seeing but not seeing. Paśyati na paśyati. Because of attachment to the temporary. So that's the path of the Mahajans. The phrase that's used here is Mahat Kritena. Krit means to do. Mahat Kritena, following the activities of the Mahats. Mahajano yena katha sapanta, so often Prabhupada would like to quote that verse. Mahat Kritena means the same. Mahat Krit. Mahat Kritena. I find it interesting, I even circled it in my book, this, in the word for word, Mahat Kritena, by that action which is considered the most powerful original existence. Pretty amazing. The most powerful original existence. The most powerful original existence. Speaking of the Mahajans, the Mahats, and then in turn those who follow the Mahats or the Mahajans. It restores our original existence, and our original existence is this absorption in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we follow the, not imitate, but we follow the footsteps of the Mahajans as they meditate upon the lotus feet of the Lord. So Prabhupada is presenting in the purport. For example, quoting Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Maharaj Parikshit absorbed his mind by hearing. Shukadeva Goswami absorbed his mind by speaking. And then he next, just without giving the reference, by becoming the friend of the Lord, etc. Any one of the nine processes illustrated by these 12 Mahajans and other perfected souls. It's not that other souls are not perfected, or by following their example, like Haridas Thakur, we don't imitate, but following the example of Rupa Goswami and other perfected souls. That's the path, gata sapanta, the path of the most powerful original existence, restoring it so that that absorption can become complete. During this month of April, that just a little while ago passed, I visited a number of universities, and one of them was Emory University. You're distributing books at these places, and I was giving classes at their clubs. The topic that they requested at Emory was Beyond Nirvana, the Path of Yoga. Like, you know, new people hearing about Beyond Nirvana. I thought that was an interesting topic for new people. But hey, that's what they want. And it was held in a liberal arts area of campus, liberal arts library, in fact, you know, a room in that building. And good turnout, good questions. But the topic that I was asked to speak at Emory, it's the same topic as here. Beyond, so the goal of life is to go beyond nescience, or to go beyond the forces that bind one to repeated birth and death. Not just liberation in the release from material existence sense, but beyond that. So beyond nirvana, because Prabhupada gives this very simple definition. Nirvana means, quote, cessation of material existence, unquote. Nirvana, in the negative sense, in the Buddhist sense, in the shunya sense, is nothingness. Material existence is somethingness, and then there's nothingness. The other side of somethingness, or the other side of material existence, is enlightenment. And what's that enlightenment? Nothingness. Void. Nirvana. I don't know what the Sanskrit term that they use other than nirvana, but their sense of what nirvana is nothingness. Because cessation of material existence leads to nothingness. So what's on the other side of nirvana? It's right in the purport. Something that many, many times Prabhupada would quote, Swarupena Vyavastiti, Dhyana Vastita Tadgatena Manasa Pashyanti Yam Yoginaha, is another phrase. It's spoken by, it's 12.13.1. It's the last chapter of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. It's spoken by Sutta about Shukadeva. one of the Mahajans. And Shukadev is being glorified by having attained this stage that the perfected yogis achieve, which is dhyana vastita tadgatena manasa pashyanti yam yoginaha, that their mind, manasa, fully absorbed, doesn't go anywhere else, not even a fringe, not a fraction, a little speck, just fully absorbed in the personality of Godhead. As yogis achieve that, it's glorified that Shukadeva Goswami achieved that in relation to the personality of Godhead. Now, he achieved that, we just heard in the previous paragraph, in the purport, by speaking. It doesn't mean before he spoke, he was conditioned. Doesn't mean that. He wasn't conditioned. Brahman realized, hearing about the personality of Godhead, he left all that Brahman realization for absorption in Ajita. That's in the previous chapter, 12. Then chapter 13, he achieved that which yogis strive to achieve, but it became complete, consummate, in absorption in Bhagavan feature. And he engaged in transcendental loving service to Bhagavan. He achieved spiritual perfection. As did Maharshi Parikshit, went back to Godhead, when he left his body with his mind absorbed in the personality of Godhead in full devotion to him, Shukadeva Goswami, we can understand also, went back to Godhead. So that's this swarupena, swarupa, one's spiritual form, is beyond nirvana. When you stop material existence, what do? What's it like? You engage in activities in your spiritual form with mind fully absorbed. So we can practice, exactly as Prabhupada is saying in the purport, by any one of the nine processes of devotional service and absorbing the mind. Exactly as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. Always think of me and engage in your prescribed duty. In his case, it's fighting. Mama Nusmara Yudhyacha. Anusmara Yudhyacha. Engage your mind in thinking of me and engage in your dharma. Do your duty. Your duty is protection. Engage in your duty. And whatever our duty may be, engage in your duty and always think of me. Same as, the verse that Prabhupada would quote so many times, Maharaj Ambarish, Savai Manak Krishna Padara Vindayo. And then the rest, the process of bhakti that he demonstrated was first, the mind becomes absorbed, and then varieties of services, using his legs and hands and this and that's, his ears. We engage our senses in service of the master of the senses, and paramount is the mind must be absorbed in Krishna. Now, for the mind to be absorbed in Krishna, that's not easy because the mind is chanchala. We all know all about that one from practical experience. Intention may be good. Mind is chanchala. So how to get from the chanchala to the samadhi stage? And samadhi stage specifically is beyond cessation of material existence. It's follow the path of Mahajans. Let's read the verse again. Oh, lotus-eyed Lord, by concentrating one's meditation, samadhina, on your lotus feet, which are the reservoir of all existence, and by accepting those lotus feet as the boat by which to cross the ocean of nations, one follows in the footsteps of Mahajanas. By this simple process, one can cross the ocean of nations as easily as one steps over the hoofprint of a calf. This verse, text 30, precedes another really wonderful verse, text 31, where the same crossing the ocean of nations is described. And it speaks specifically about the great souls, the acharyas, that leave the boat behind. The boat behind is the lotus feet of the Lord. In our case, we'll hear about it tomorrow, that's the Bhagavatam. It's particularly the first two cantos of the Bhagavatam. It is the lotus feet of the Lord. When Prabhupada brought the first canto, he said, everything you need to know to go back to God, it is here. So why bother with the rest of the cantos? Because with the lotus feet of the Lord comes all of his form. It comes the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. But the essence must be accepted from the position of the heart. Simply by seeing the transcendental form of the Lord, a devotee is at once fully absorbed in the Lord, in his heart. Simply by seeing the transcendental form of the Lord, a devotee is at once fully absorbed in the Lord, in his heart. That's chapter 2 of canto 2, the Lord of the heart. And then from that comes pure devotional service, change of heart. This transition or transformation from the material to this fully spiritual condition by any one of the nine processes, and striving to fully absorb the mind in the lotus feet of the Lord. So we'll continue tomorrow. Very nice verse tomorrow. Any discussion on this one? Mahat Kratena, the most powerful original existence. Yes?
Krishna, I was just wondering about the Emory College, that they put the topic beyond Nirvana. It's quite bewildering, because when we go to the colleges...
When you go where?
To the colleges for the book distribution.
Yeah, yeah.
They usually speak about, does this book talk about Nirvana? And we say, no, it's beyond Nirvana. It doesn't have any conception, but I'm very surprised that when you say that they have a topic of beyond Nirvana. It's something new to hear.
Yeah, well, people today, they get their information from Google, the internet. And Buddhism is popular, they hear the word Nirvana and say, yeah, that sounds cool. The same as, you know, become one. Well, yeah, what do they know what it means? It's just a phrase. So it's fun and effective to help people go, whoa, what was that, beyond Nirvana? And the same thing with Become One. I was just in Minneapolis before coming here, and there was a young fellow, American, who came to all the programs, although he's not from Minneapolis, he's from another city. And he sat through a whole class, and then at the end he wanted to ask a separate question. So the separate question was, so in summary, is what you're saying that the goal is to become one with the Supreme? There are, you know, so, no. The goal is to recognize each of us are very tiny parts of the unlimited Supreme, and we should serve him. And that's beyond becoming one with the Supreme. It's the oneness of love.
Oh.
Can you tell me some more about it? So it depends on this was an inquisitive young man, not a, you know. But even an inquisitive person can just hear what they're accustomed to hearing. Even you say something else. I think we've all had that experience. Common for me. I'm standing in line waiting to board a plane. Somebody comes and says, are you with a religious organization? And I'm tempted to say, duh. Or, no, it's Halloween. Or something like that. But you know, so yes. So may I ask you, you know, what are your views or your teachings? And I say the teachings. They say, oh, mine's the same. I believe you should be nice to everybody and don't harm anybody. And that's not what I said, but that's what they heard. I mean, not every time, but that's... Oh. It's good to have people off guard a little bit. Yeah, beyond nirvana. Are you a Buddhist monk? No, I'm a Krishna monk. Huh? What's a Krishna monk?
Before I ask you a question, I just want to ask simple. Maharaj, what did you...
Speak slowly.
Yeah. What did you spoke about this topic beyond nirvana? You talk about bhakti in the school? I'm just curious.
You're curious, what did I say?
Yeah.
Swaropainavyavastati. That's what I said. I put it on the screen and explained what it meant. And then showed a picture of Narada. There's that children's book illustration where Narada, it's the story of Narada. And when he left his body, he manifested a spiritual form. And then he does the Narada program in his Swarup. And that's beyond cessation of material existence, which is what nirvana is. And we're invited into that realm, the realm that's beyond nirvana.
You told that Mahajans, to control the chanchal mind, they...
Speak slowly. To do to what?
To control their mind. The
fickle, to control their mind. Uh-huh.
They use the process of bhakti.
Yeah.
At the same time, Sukadeva Goswami was extremely Brahman realized soul, and his mind was extremely controlled without the process of bhakti.
Without what?
Without the process of bhakti.
Who's that?
He was focusing on Brahman, not on personal feature of Krishna.
It's incomplete.
It's complete.
That's the answer. After some time, anesthesia wears off. The state where the mind is put to rest, this nirvana state where desire stops, because that's the teaching. That's Buddhism teaching. Desire is the root cause of suffering. To overcome suffering, stop desire. So there's the process to stop desire. It's anesthesia. And when anesthesia wears off, here comes desire. Because it was just suppressed or anesthetized. It has to do with the reality that there is a soul. And the soul is part of the Supreme. And the Supreme has spiritual desire, living entity has that capacity also. But in forgetfulness of the Supreme, it becomes material desire. So you suppress the material desire, and the anesthesia wears off. Padam padam yadvi padam natesham.
The total suppression is might be impossible. They might be getting some happiness.
There's something that keeps them going. Sense, there's something that's the senses and sense enjoyment. There's the something that the cessation of material desire. Prabhupada likens it, very simple, bang your head against the wall. You could do that for a long time and then stop. Go ahead.
I was reading in a purport describing smarnam as like meditation.
Which one?
Smarnam as meditation.
On Marma?
Smarnam.
Smarnam, okay.
Yeah. And so I've been thinking that a lot of times I'm like going through chanting and hearing, but I'm not really remembering. I'm just kind of doing it mechanically, and I'm wondering if there's anything I can do to improve the smarnam process.
This was your question last night. The words were different, but it was the same question. Remember? I remember. And I gave you two things. Remember?
I don't see how it exactly correlates.
Huh?
I don't see how it exactly correlates what I asked.
It was a different question last night?
I don't remember exactly what I asked, yes.
I do. At least my understanding, right or wrong, was this, if not verbatim, not verbatim, but how to go beyond mechanical chanting, in essence, and so that while chanting and during the day, my mind is in devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because my chanting is, I'm doing, but it's without absorption, and therefore the activities during the day is I'm absorbed in the activity, but not in devotion to Krishna. So how do I take up chanting in such a way that there's proper absorption and, in turn, in the activities during the day? You didn't use those words, but that's what I understood you were asking, which sounds similar. So, I'll just repeat, no problem. What I said was, I've been preparing for the last month and continuing for the rest of this month on the Festival of the Holy Name topics, and the first one is, the first class is going to be on this, and it's specifically the mood of service to the name that has two parts. How regard the name, it's not simply a process, it's Krishna himself, and we're get the fullness of our relationship with Krishna starting with the mood of service. It then can diversify in different rasas, but the mood of service. We say, the whole class is going to expand on that point. So rather than expand on the point, the mood of service, while chanting, the mood of service to the name. And then throughout the day, that mood of service to the name stays with you because that's who you are. That spiritual potency becomes awakened in the soul through the power of the potencies of the holy name and your regard for the name as master, servant, or mood of service to the name. And there's scriptural reference to support all of this. Then the next is prayer to descending mercy. And the descending mercy, of course, from the Master, but then also the deliverer of the name, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Namo Mahavaranyaya, and those that represent to him, the disciplic succession from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Our Gaudiya line places great emphasis on calling for the mercy of previous acharyas. And then, of course, the persons who gave you the name. Not only the Diksha Guru, but the persons who gave you the name, the Vaishnavas. The mercy factor to go beyond the mechanical, I'm going to do it. Mentality. Remember? So it it's not like, okay, there's the answer. It's a cultivation of our relationship with Krishna, starting with our relationship with the Holy Name. And it's for everybody. It's a bhakti process, cultivation. Yes.
Okay. I guess my question is more about, is there any like specific activity or way you can like practice smarnam, like meditative?
Yeah, starts with hearing and chanting.
Starts with hearing and chanting.
Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smarnam. Because of absorption in hearing and chanting, Smarnam comes. That is the same. How do you do your Shravanam Kirtanam? That's how to cultivate proper Smarnam. Remembrance, it's already there, but it's forgotten or dormant. Our original Krishna consciousness is dormant. Needs to be awakened. Then awakened through bhakti. And bhakti through, for this age, by the mercy of Mahaprabhu, primarily through the name that anybody can do. Even if we do it terribly, we're getting benefit. Even if we're doing it laughingly or negligently, we're getting benefit. Merciful process, and everything is there within the process. But it's not a vending machine kind of a process, not a mechanical process. We have to move from the mechanical to the devotional. Hearing and chanting leads to remembrance, smaranam. Okay.
Maharaj, I am still confused. So what is the basic difference between...
What's the basic what?
Difference. Between Shankara philosophy and Buddha philosophy.
Shankara, okay. The primary difference is Brahman, Shankaracharya taught there is a positive existence. Buddha taught there isn't. Nothing. There is something. Brahman. But his definition of Brahman, Shankara's definition of Brahman, is so closely resembles Buddha's teachings, even the language is quite similar. The methodology is quite similar. It's not what real Brahman is. It's negation of this. That's Buddhism. So it's word jugglery, but at least the declaration is, no, it's not nothingness. There is Brahman. What's Brahman? It's not this. Okay?
What is the, then you say Buddha philosophy is Nirvana. But what is that Sunyavadi then? Sunyavadi, is it similar word to Nirvana?
The same.
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 Then what is Mayavadi then? What the
word? It's just word jugglery. You know this one. You like reading Prabhupada's books. In Prabhupada's books and our acharyas teach, what Shankara taught is covered Buddhism. So the language sounds different. Scrape away the language and it's covered Buddhism. Because the definition of what Brahman is by Shankara's teaching is the same as the definition of Shunya. Or Nirvana. It's the cessation of material existence, and what's on the other side is Brahman. But Brahman is more than that. Even Brahman is more than that, what to speak of Paramatma and Bhagavan. So he said what he said on the authority of the Vedas, but he interprets the Vedas in such a contorted manner, it's unrecognizable. But, so that's the second. Buddha rejected the Vedas. Shankara Acharya accepted the Vedas. And on Vedic authority, he taught, second, he taught covered Buddhism. He interpreted the Vedas in such a way, it helped get the buy-in, you know, strategic-wise. It got the buy-in from the people that had been strongly influenced by Buddhism. It sounded so similar, but now here it's Vedic, covered Buddhism. Then other acharyas had to come along and say, no, Brahman is all spiritual, etc. You know, they set the record straight, what the Vedas do say. Anything else? Yes, last question up here.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. My question is slightly different but similar to Giridhari Prabhu's. Regarding when we say prayers, when we offer prayers, the tendency is that even though I've been in Krishna consciousness for years, That I've been in Krishna consciousness for many years, and if I had to explain to someone what these prayers meant, I would probably give them the essence instead of like a, you know, summary. So my question is related to when we say prayers, I found in my personal life that since I was born speaking English, when I want some help from the Lord, the natural tendency is not to go to the Sanskrit. And so I feel like personally maybe people minimize, you know, calling to the Lord in their own language. So so that's my question essentially, is that should we minimize the English? Or because it seems like if I minimize the English, then my heart is not into it when I speak the Sanskrit, because I don't, you know, naturally we don't say the English every day, or the translations of the Sanskrit, we're just saying the Sanskrit word, so it becomes mechanical in that sense. So, and that's basically my question related to absorbing the mind in the Lord. I feel like when I speak the English, please help me, Lord, I could easily absorb my mind in the holy name, but when I mechanically say the Sanskrit prayers, it's like nothing.
Well, you know, we're all different. And somebody might find this and somebody might find that is particularly effective. The goal is to absorb the mind in Krishna. So we know, you and I, whoever, whether they like this language, that language, we know that the scripture, not just the Sanskrit language, but the scripture carries spiritual potency. So recite in the original language, it has special potency. It's not that the rendering in English of prayer or any other message doesn't have the same potency. Just say like Bhagavad Gita verses. Sarvadharmam parityaja mamekam. So you can say in English, but you go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth enough, and it's very special. The Sanskrit text is very special, and it's important in the bhakti process that you meditate upon the meaning. Now, since English is your mother tongue, somebody else may be something else, maybe Russian, maybe Chinese. So it's natural to think of meditate on the meaning in your native tongue. But eventually the absorption will become the Sanskrit sound vibration. Sarvadharmam parityaja. And it has the full meaning. Or mantra upasana, mantra meditation, is the meaning. It's recommended in Hari Bhakti Vilas, whatever your language is, meditate on the meaning when chanting the mantra. So initially, this is my experience anyway, initially the meditating on the meaning is in your own language, and eventually it's in the Sanskrit itself. The meaning is there. although it's not mother tongue. And that's when my experience is the deeper meaning starts to come out more than just like the English rendering, because English is a language of passion and Sanskrit is a language of goodness, if not transcendence. So it helps. Go back and forth enough, whichever way works for you, so that when you hear the Sanskrit, including the Maha Mantra, you don't need to like say it in English. You pay the Maha Mantra. Yes. When you're doing what?
When I'm saying a Sanskrit mantra and my pronunciation is not clear, maybe I'm saying something wrong, like pronouncing something wrong, and which is actually having a different meaning.
Got it.
Like I remember, like in Ramayana, it is written like when Shri Ram went for, he was about to go to fight with Ravan. That time there was a particular puja gonna happen, and that time Hanumanji went as a rishi at Ravan's place, and there was a person who was saying every ha as a pa, like every syllable as some other word. So what I'm trying to say is the meaning of the Sanskrit mantra can become different if I'm not pronouncing correct. So that gives me a pushback that don't say Sanskrit, rather say only English.
Same. My answer to your question is the same. That is to say, here's something Prabhupada said. Supposing, like in Spanish, the sound of R is a little different. And so when they say Krishna's name, Krishna knows, and Krishna accepts. It's similar, not the same, but similar to Gajendra. In the prayer that Gajendra was reciting, the Acharya's comment, he doesn't say the name, but Brahma, Vishnu, and Lord Shiva, they understood the intention, and so Lord Vishnu came. When we had this discussion 2 evenings ago in Naperville about offering oblations to the Pitris. Now there's a Karmakanda procedure and there's a Vaishnava procedure. So the person asking was, my father and my grandfather, they did the ritual. Does that mean because they did the ritual, they went to Pitriloka? Or does it, and should I, because should I do that ritual? And so the answer was, the consciousness behind the activity is significantly important. Because you are a Krishna Bhakta, and you wish to be with Krishna, and you're doing this religious activity of offering Vishnu Prasad, Pinda, to some departed ancestor. But it's not you wish to go to that Pitraloka and be with your ancestor. You wish to do a dharma with your mind absorbed in Krishna, which is exactly what Krishna says to Arjuna. Madgatena, think of me and perform your prescribed duty. So it's a prescribed duty. You, this gentleman in Naperville, and mind upon Krishna. So, because the Vishnu Prasad offered to the departed ancestor, wherever he may be, maybe not Pitraloka, but it's a religious duty, and he's getting spiritual benefit because you, the male descendant, is offering Vishnu Prasad. So the consciousness behind the activity is everything. And that's the bhakti principle. It's not that we have to rework our lives, stop your career and become a sannyasi or something. You live in the world, perform prescribed duties, with your consciousness going to the Supreme. So back to the question. If one recites something from Ramayana that's not exact pronunciation, the consciousness behind it is important. And therefore, it's very important that we get translations from people that have the right consciousness, not just their scholarship, because scholarship can skew things all over the place. This means that. Goes on all the time. So, if you're reading in English, fantastic. Be very careful, the source, the translator.
Thank you.
Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.